Farm Food Facts, where every farmer, every acre, and every voice matter.
Welcome to Farm Food Facts for Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. I'm your host, Phil Lempert. Today, we're going to discuss pork. More importantly, women in the pork industry. And with us are two women who are perfect for this discussion, Dr. Liz Wagstrom and Maddie Hokanson. Dr. Wagstrom currently serves as the chief veterinarian for the National Pork Producers Council. She leads NPPC's science and technology efforts, including on responsible antibiotic use and antibiotic use data collection and reporting. During her career, she's worked at the intersection of animal health and public health, including as a practicing veterinarian and public health veterinarian, an industry organization staff member, and in academia. Maddie Hokanson is part of the seventh generation at Schaefer Farms, located in Goodyew, Minnesota, where they've been raising pigs and beef cattle since 1886. In addition to the farm, Maddie works in freelance communication for the National Pork Board, being part of the planning and execution of farm tours and video shoots across the country. Welcome, both of you, to Farm Food Facts.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Wagstrom, let's start with you. Tell me a bit about the Swine Veterinary Public Policy Advocacy Program.
The Swine Veterinary Public Policy Advocacy Program, which now I'll just call the program because that's too much of a mouthful of words to say, is a program we've been running for about 10 years at National Pork Producers Council. And it's a way to help veterinarians expand into the area of advocating for the pork industry and the veterinary profession. We have three sessions, one in Washington, D.C., that focuses on how legislation's made. So how do you get laws passed? How do you influence that those laws are the right laws for our industry? Then we do a second session focused on trade.
Doctor, before you get to that, explain to me why it's important for a veterinarian to understand how laws are made.
We look at our industry, both the veterinary practice as well as the pork industry. There are a lot of people that may be interested in legislating how we practice medicine or how we grow our animals. And a lot of those people have no concept of what we do on the farms or in our practices. So as a veterinarian, we can come up to Capitol Hill. We can talk from experience about what veterinarians do and how we work with our farmers that raise pigs.
So when we talk about these legislators and you get in front of them and other veterinarians get in front of them, what are some of the kinds of questions that they bring up or some of the issues that they bring up that you as a doctor say, oh, wow, you know, how do you not know this? And they're, you know, legislating and, you know, what are those kind of things?
Well, we have misinformation out there, such as every pig every day gets antibiotics. Couldn't be further from the truth. So as a veterinarian, we can talk to them about why we use antibiotics, why we work to minimize the need to use antibiotics, and just the care that we take to make sure that our animals are healthy and produce safe food.
Got it. So move on to the course number two on trade.
Course number two is a trade policy. The last 2 years, we've been going to Colombia to show how a free trade agreement has worked to benefit both countries. We've actually done advertising in Colombia just for pork, assuming that if it's Colombian pork or if it's U.S. pork, if pork sales increase total in Colombia, it's good for Colombian farmers and U.S. farmers. Talk about some of the what we call SPS issues, sanitary and phytosanitary issues that might prevent trading partners from wanting our pork, whether it is testing for certain pathogens, whether it is requiring either that we don't use certain animal health products. And so we talk about how we resolve those issues. And, you know, we export over 25% of the pork that we produce in the United States. So trade's extremely important.
And then course number three?
Course number three is the regulatory structure. So before I came to DC, I just assumed that somebody in Capitol Hill wrote a law and it just became implemented, not realizing that that whole executive branch of the regulatory structure, whether it's FDA or USDA or EPA, they have to write rules. They have to write rules that enforce what the legislation was intended for, but we need to be involved in that rule writing to make sure that it is those rules are achievable, that we can comply with them, and that they do follow the intent of the legislation. So we often bring veterinarians into FDA and USDA to talk about how they work on the farms with our farmers.
So you actually served as chairman for the USDA Secretary's Advisory Committee on Animal Health. So clearly from a policy standpoint, you understand it. What are some of the biggest challenges that the pork industry has right now with the folks in Washington?
For the science and technology issues that I focus on, we've got two main focuses. One is that in the 2018 Farm Bill, we got a significant amount of funding to help purchase a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank, as well as to have some grants to states for either diagnostics or prevention. We wanted that money start to be spent the minute the ink was dry on the Farm Bill. They're still just now starting to get out the request for proposals and identifying vendors to do that. So we've had to keep a constant pressure on to make sure that money is spent as intended. The second big thing we're working on is with the advent of African swine fever in Asia. It is a animal-only, pig-only disease, doesn't affect pork safety or humans. We are advocating very strongly to increase the number of agricultural inspectors that Customs and Border Protection would have at airports, seaports, and land crossings. We need 600 more inspectors. It's a huge lift, but we've been working hard on that too.
So talking about Asia, let's switch over to Maddie. Maddie, first of all, congratulations on graduation.
Well, thank you very much.
And I understand that right after graduation, I don't know if this was a graduation present, or just something that you chose to do, you went over to China for 15 days. Why?
So I actually chose to take a class through the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences at SDSU the spring of my senior year. So it's a semester-long class where we studied about topics in agriculture specifically relating to China, and then just the culture of China as well. And then after graduation, the Monday after, actually, we hopped on a plane and headed over to China for 15 days. And we went to Shanghai, Xi'an, Inner Mongolia, and then also Beijing. And during that time, we got a whole mix of talking about, like I said, the culture that China has and how different it is from the United States, as well as understanding their agriculture industry and how it so dramatically impacts ours.
So what did you learn? What was the biggest surprise? I had been to China as part of a UN delegation a long time ago. And I walked away very, very surprised with everything that I learned. Now, I know that they've gotten, you know, fast-tracked on a lot of technology and so on from the time that I was there. But what did you learn that really surprised you about China and agriculture?
Yeah, well, great question. I would have to say the biggest thing that I learned regarding agriculture in China is just how similar they really are to our day-to-day practices. And we went to a poultry farm, we went to beef farms, we went to dairy farms. We didn't go to a pork farm due to African swine fever and making sure that we were mitigating any risk of bringing that back home. But everything was actually very similar in the way it was done. The scope and scale of how it was completed and just the amount that people care, I would say, is very similar there. The biggest difference, though, would be the way that it's owned. So almost all of those large-scale farms are owned at least in large part by their government as well. So I think that was the biggest difference to go and learn about, and how much impact their government has on the decisions that are made within those farms, instead of it just being the decision of the farm owners themselves.
So culturally, what did you learn that surprised you?
And I think the biggest thing I learned culturally was just the fact that the people, they care so much about what their image is looking like. And I think whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, people do things to save face, we call it, and make sure that what they're doing is going to look good in a light. So they work really hard every day. That work is their number one priority, and making sure that their child has a good future and a good job. So we talked to one lady that her son plays ping pong as a third grader 2 hours every single day to become a pro at ping pong. And that, I think, is just so interesting because that is such a different philosophy from what we as Americans have been raised as in the way most people anyway raise their children.
One of the things that I noticed when I was there, and I don't know whether it still goes on, but practically every corner has like a little park, and the citizens would go into that park and exercise, do, you know, very slow motion exercises and stuff every day as part of their life.
Yeah, that was another thing we got to see a lot of. It typically ended up being probably any women from 40 to 60 was kind of the average age that we saw. And they'd be on street corners, in parks, on bridges, sometimes blocking traffic. A couple of interesting things like that. But the other thing that I really loved was the amount of roses that were everywhere. And that was something I wasn't expecting, but it was actually really beautiful.
Yeah, I didn't see that either. So, Doctor, you know, when we look at careers in pork, you know, Maddie is a perfect example. Seventh generation pork producer, graduates, goes to China, learns more about agriculture. Tell us a little bit more about what kind of careers there are for women as it relates to pork.
The career pathway is wide open. We need people who can work in our barns, who are responsible, who are caring, who are detail-oriented. And we see women succeeding tremendously in the barns. But then we also see women in management in our farm systems. And most of our farm systems that would have an animal care or animal welfare specialist, many of those positions are held by women. A lot of that concerns training of people on proper animal care, as well as the detail orientation of being able to do appraisals and audits of if those animal care protocols are being followed. In veterinary medicine, we have a vast majority of women in our veterinary school classes, probably around 80 to 90% of women coming in or of students coming into veterinary school are women. And we see women very successfully going into veterinary practice, whether it's as a employee of a production company or whether it's in a private practice that deals with multiple farmers. And so to me, the sky's the limit on women in the pork industry. And it's so gratifying to see. I mean, I look at Maddie and I, we're kind of different ends of the spectrum as far as where we are in our career paths and age. When I started out in the pork industry, we always kind of joked, we said there'd never be a line in the women's bathroom because we just didn't have enough women at meetings. And it's so fun to see that, you know, I don't mind standing in line when I see all these just tremendous young women who have joined our industry.
So, Maddie, I get why you went back to the farm, seventh generation. It's in your blood. Talk to me a bit about other people, other friends and students that were in the program with you. What are they doing now that they've graduated?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I graduated with a degree in agricultural communications and leadership. So I guess nothing related to accounting, as I can say, but that's what I'm doing home on the farm. So I think people that graduated with that degree are doing a vast variety of things, anywhere from doing journalism and writing or working in social media and communication, whether that's for a specific company or working for a public relations firm. But then there are others that have chosen to go and be a part of a farm. I've got one friend who is going to be graduating this next December, and she is working on developing her own freelance business that allows her to work individually for small farms and help develop their social media, their blog plans, and writing just their communication style, because that's something that when you go to school to work in production agriculture, that's not necessarily your focus on how do we go and talk about what we do. So then bringing those people in that have had that specialization or really have that passion for sharing that story, I think that's a really wonderful thing to go and blend the two together. So for instance, with my family's farm, my brother is home on the farm and manages one of our sow units. And then I am on the other side of it doing our accounting as well as some of our social media and our communication stuff. So we work well together because we are so different.
So I want to go back to what Liz was talking about as far as the barn culture. So Maddie, do you ever go into the barn?
At this point in my life, I'm not going in as often as I used to. Growing up in about third grade is when I started, and I'd breed sows, farrow, go through all the processes that you need to do to keep pigs healthy, and did that all through high school. But once I got into college, then that amount backed off. And then, like I said, it kind of turned into more the communication side and the behind the scenes of what makes a farm run.
So Liz, you know, for the novices out there, I think that most people believe that the role of a veterinarian, and you've done a great job of explaining the breadth of what veterinarians do, but veterinarians, for the most part, you know, get the phone call that, oh, you know, my sow is sick, you know, come visit. Talk a little bit about that. Is it just when a sow becomes ill that you're called in and you know, you're setting up everything to prevent them from getting sick? But from a day to day, what does a veterinarian do on a hog farm?
That's a great question, because when I looked at going into veterinary medicine, you know, almost 40 years ago, that's exactly what it was. You had the big pickup truck and the radio, and people would call you and you got diverted to this call or to that call. And it couldn't be further from the day-to-day picture now. Veterinarians become part of a management team, and they are involved in helping design systems that will keep animals healthy rather than to just treat sick pigs. And so it could be anything from saying, we ought to wean our pigs at this age to, we need to wash our trucks more and we ought to put big air dryers in the trucks so that when they dry off, they won't spread any disease to subsequent animals that might come into that same truck. So the breadth of veterinary medicine has changed so tremendously. It involves management, it involves epidemiology, it involves process flows. It's just very much a holistic look at what you can do throughout the life of an animal to keep them healthy. And we spend a lot of time on things that may not mean looking at animals, but it might be looking at records. It might be looking at inspecting a truck wash, you know, just to make sure that they're washing trucks well enough. So it's a very diverse occupation. And I think that's why it's so interesting to the veterinarians who choose to go into swine medicine.
So the way you're describing it, you're like, and veterinarians are like, you know, the chief technology and science officer of a farm.
Absolutely. And that person, the veterinarian, will work closely with the nutritionist, because, you know, you'll have the nutritionist giving input on the healthy diets. They will work with the engineers who are looking at temperature and air flows and systems to make sure that the temperature and humidity and that the environment inside the barn is comfortable for the animal. So you'll have several people working on technology, but the veterinarian's focus is that how that technology relates to the health of the pig.
So Maddie, describe for me, if you would, your family's relationship with your veterinarian.
Right. That's something that we speak very openly about and really positively. Since we opened up our first barn in 1997, our first actual sow unit, we've worked really closely with our veterinarians. They're in, at sometimes it's once a week, sometimes it's once a month, but it's constant contact, whether that's a phone call once a day, sometimes twice a day when things are going on. We make sure that we're having very open and honest communication about what we're doing, because they're the experts, in fact, and we need to go and make sure that when something's going wrong, that we're reaching out to them. And before things are going wrong as well, we're reaching out to make sure that we're continuing to do things right. So we have very open communication with our veterinarians, and we really pride ourselves and enjoy that relationship that we have with them, and realize just how important and vital of a role they serve in the success of our farm.
So you've just graduated, you're starting, I understand your grandmother's decided to retire, so you're filling in her shoes. What do you want to be doing on the farm in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now?
Well, that's the perfect question that nobody has the right answer to, right? I'd say that in 5, 10, 15 years, I want to do whatever it is that allows our farm to continue to thrive. And we've been going for 135 years, and that's because people in the family and people in our community step up and they do whatever needs to be done. So if that means continuing to do the financial records and the accounting, then that's what I'll be doing. But if that means that we need to go and transition and add in more of a, we're having some of the opportunities to do tours in our barns. So if that means sharing that message with the public, because consumer perception is another huge challenge that we deal with in the pork industry, then that's what I'll make sure that I'm doing. But I want to make sure that no matter what it is I do in my career, that our family's farm and the pork industry and the agriculture industry are at the forefront of my decision making, because at the end of the day, that's what feeds our world. That's also how my family makes a living and makes a life.
And Dr. Wagstrom, what do you want to be doing 5, 10, 15 years from now in your career?
Well, I hope I'm around in 15 years, but I really want to keep advocating on behalf of the pork industry and the veterinary profession. I want to keep being energized by young people like Maddie, who every time I get a group of them together, I'm just like, first of all, I'm glad I didn't have to compete with people like that to get into vet school when I did, because they're just tremendously energetic, talented, enthusiastic, and dedicated people. And so I just want to be able to advocate on behalf of the ability for them to keep producing safe, wholesome food and having a life on the farm.
Yes, and I can echo that with talking about young people in agriculture. It is such an interesting topic and it's such an interesting demographic that's going on today, because so many people that didn't grow up on a farm but were involved in 4-H or FFA, seeing them all at school and seeing them having just as much or more passion about the pork industry than those that grew up on it, where I think it just comes naturally and you sometimes take it for granted. But those that didn't grow up on it, just how much they are thankful to be a part of it and how progressive a thinking of an organization and an industry it is. I think that really is what makes the pork industry so wonderful. And that's the reason that I'm so blessed to be a part of it.
And I want to thank both of you for joining us today on Farm Food Facts.
Well, thank you.
And now for the news you need to know. This summer, the USDA released its annual Technology Transfer Report on tech innovation in the agriculture sector. The Technology Transfer Report highlights innovations from scientists and researchers who are solving problems for farmers, ranchers, foresters, and producers, and creating opportunities for American businesses to thrive. The report revealed 320 new inventions from USDA laboratories. Discoveries include a repellent made from coconut oil to ward off blood-sucking insects that cost the cattle industry more than $2.4 billion each year. Technology that keeps almond crops from being lost to heavy rains, and a treatment for peanut allergies. Other innovation highlights include a system for removing nitrate from contaminated water and recycling it for reuse as fertilizer, a test strip for major foodborne pathogens that reduces testing time from 24 to 72 hours to about 30 minutes, and a vaccine against strep that may markedly improve the health and welfare of pigs while reducing the use of antibiotics. And along with tech innovation, farming practices continue to evolve as well. The radical farming system that puts pigs in the shade. A farm in Portugal is demonstrating how silvopasture farming, combining livestock with productive trees, could offer some real solutions to our ongoing climate challenges. Alfredo Cunnell is an agriculture scientist combining herds of animals with productive trees and shrubs on vast expanses of land. He tells us, animals are the key. They're important for the whole ecosystem as well as part of the food chain. They must be balanced with the tree system. Pigs provide digestion, and they're good for the soil. They disturb the ground and fertilize the land. The natural fertility cycles work better with them. The pig is not a meat machine, but a friend of nature. Studies from Africa, Brazil, Europe, Sri Lanka, and other places all show conclusively that interspersing trees, animals, and crops can not only boost food production, but also help build up the soil, increase biodiversity, and sequester CO2 from the atmosphere. For more information on all things food and agriculture and to listen to our archives, please visit fooddialogues.com under the Programs and Media tab and visit us on Facebook at U.S. Farmers and Ranchers or on Twitter at USFRA. Until next time.